If you're haunted and harassed by your own inner critic, if you've ever been curious about why hypnosis works so well, if you're a seasoned hypnotist, or if you suspect that the inner critic is actually hypnotizing you to hold back from reaching the greatness that you know deep down is inside you, lean in and get inspired to get out of your comfort zone and create your one precious life with purpose and intention. If you like this show, you'll love my powerful hypnosis audio, The Answer Room, because it gives you crystal clear guidance and direction and illuminates an ingenious way to make triumphant decisions, no matter how stuck you feel or how confused you were. This powerful hypnosis audio is my gift to you when you go to theimpostermonster.com. Again, that's theimpostermonster.com. Don't forget the. Theimpostermonster.com. And yes, I'm done saying it. Thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening. I'm Lori Hammond, and I'm truly grateful for you.
Welcome, everyone. I am so grateful to be here with you and with my guest, Michael DeShallet. Michael is an international award-winning hypnotist, magician, and speaker. He has performed all over the globe and in some of the most exclusive venues. He recently took residency at the Downtown Grand Hotel and Casino and was a featured headliner in the show Hypnomania. Since then, and because the world has spun off its axis due to the global pandemic, Michael has concentrated on his online hypnosis practice, helping clients worldwide. If you don't know Michael, you will by the end of this podcast. And if you do know Michael, you already know he doesn't have an internal filter, so you really don't know what's going to come out of his mouth. Buckle up, kids, and hang on. It's going to be a wild ride. Welcome, Michael. I'm so grateful to have you here.
Oh, thanks, Lori. I am just so grateful to be here on this side of the dirt. And I, you know what? When you asked me to, if I wanted to be a part of this podcast, I didn't even finish reading the question. I was like, hell yeah, I would do anything for you. You are the coolest person in the world. And I totally remember the first time we met, you didn't know who I was. I didn't know who you were. And I just get a phone call from some random chick who asked me a bunch of questions, and it was you. So it was so exciting. And I know we talked a little bit. I'm going to just jump right in because I got to tell this story, because I know we talked a little bit before this interview started, and we were trying to remember the story and how we met. And here's how it went down. Okay. I lived in Tucson at the time, but I was actually in Las Vegas. I had just got to Las Vegas, and I was going there to do a training with Jerry Valley and Tommy V. We used to have the Ultimate Stage Hypnosis seminar. And so I was going on my way to do a training. I got there a day early, and I always stop at this Walmart on the way to the hotel to get some supplies and stuff, some bottled water, things like that. So I'm walking around this Walmart, and my phone rings, and I'm like, I don't recognize this number at all, but I'll answer it. And and it was you, and you said, hey, I've got a question. I sat through one of your classes at HypnoThoughts Live, and I've got a question about this. And I was trying to think what the class was. You remembered what the class was, wasn't it? What was the class, Lori?
I don't remember what it was called, but it was about just like knocking the consultation out of the park so that the client is absolutely going to book with you.
Yeah, that's right. That was the consultation class. And you asked me a bunch of questions about it, and you were fairly new at the time. And this is several years ago now. So now you have so much experience. You should probably teach me how to do consultations. But you were so grateful that I spent the time with you. And I was just like, hey, you sound cool. Let's meet up when we go to HypnoThoughts. And we did.
Yes.
And here we are now. We are a couple now. We have been together for years. We're going steady and everything. We talk now, and we're doing a podcast. Can you believe how far we've come?
Yep.
How far have we come?
So I love it.
Crazy.
You never know what's going to happen. It's interesting because I was intimidated to reach out to you because when you listen to someone present and you know they're standing on stage, it's like they have this air of prestige and authority. And I was like you said, I was brand new at this. And I thought, I really like, this guy is so smart. He knows what he's talking about. And I had so many aha moments. And I was so used to holding myself back from doing stuff like that. And I knew that I was going to have to get out of my comfort zone if I was going to move forward. So it was out of my comfort zone to contact you. And I'm so grateful that you were so gracious. And it really shifted things for me. So I appreciate it.
Well, that was a total shift for me too, because I got everything I needed on that grocery shopping list. So it was awesome. And you know what? And thank you for those accolades. Those are very nice. Here's the thing. I love talking with new hypnotists. I want them to be successful. I want them to not have any, what you had, those nasty little things, those limiting beliefs. But I'm here to tell you though, that even experienced hypnotists have them too, though. So, you know,
and that's one of the reasons I put this show together, because I think that we feel, you know, when we have those limiting beliefs, mm-hmm. it feels like it's so unique to us. We place ourselves in the center of our own universe, and we think everybody is looking at us and judging us. And I think when we start to understand that everyone feels this way and they're just moving forward anyway, I think there's something liberating about that.
Yeah. And it's true though. We do kind of live on our own island. I say, you know, we're on our own individual islands until we go to a conference, and then we're like, oh, there's more people like us. There's these other, what do we call ourselves? Hypnotic people, hypnotist, yeah. Hypnotist, that's what it is. And there's more people like us. And it's like, I wonder if they act like I do too. And I wonder if they have the same battles and trials and tribulations. And I'm here to tell you, we all do. I've been doing this this is my 18th year, and I have my own demons too. We all do. I work with so many other hypnotists and coaching them in their business. And I have so many other hypnotist friends that, you know, some of them are smarter than me. Some of them are learning more. And I learn from them. We learn from each other. And we know that we're just on our own little island most of the time.
When you look back at the past 18 years, what comes to mind as the biggest obstacle you've overcome through that time?
Me. My biggest obstacle is me. Really. Now, when I first started, though, it's interesting because I had I didn't really know. I didn't know any better. I didn't know what I was doing, and I didn't know any better. So I just did it. And I took a stage hypnosis training class, the one that Tommy V and Jerry Valley used to teach with Orman McGill. And then later on, I became part of their staff. And I took this stage hypnosis class, and my very first show got booked, 2 weeks after the class. So I was kind of on the fast track anyways. And I'd already been a performer for years. I'd already been a professional magician for many years. So it was just changing routines and skits and comedy and stuff like that, from going from magic tricks to hypnosis. And so that part was pretty easy. So I go to the show, and at the end of the show, these two girls came up to me. It was a college sorority show too, so it was kind of fun. And these two girls came up to me and they said, "We saw what you made those people do on stage. Can you make us quit smoking?" And of course, I listened to their language. It was like, I don't make anybody do anything. I'm just kind of, you know, I offer suggestions and they do it. And they go, "Well, you know, can you make us quit smoking?" I said, "Well, I'm not qualified for that. I'm a stage guy. I'm just an entertainer." And so there's probably a hypnotist in town. You know, I looked up this one guy, and his name is Dr. Beebe. Why don't you go see him? He's pretty close to the university. And so I don't know if they did or didn't, but that was an inspiration for me to take a training to be a clinical hypnotist. I thought, well, I could have saved these two girls' lives, mm-hmm. and I could have made money by doing it too. And I left money on the table, and I missed an opportunity to save two people's lives. I'm missing the boat here. So I took a clinical training. And then I'm like, do I need an office? Do I need a pocket watch? Or what do I need now to do this? I don't really know. I mean, the training taught me enough. And so I started seeing clients in my house. I had no idea what a really good session looked like. So I just did what I thought would be good. Mm-hmm. And then later on, I learned, well, I wasn't too far off the mark, but there are some things I needed to change and do that. And it was me that got in the way. I was my biggest obstacle. Am I doing this right? Mm-hmm. Am I good? I mean, am I getting results? Do do I follow up with these people? I'm afraid to follow up with my clients because what if they say, oh, it didn't work, I'm still smoking, or it didn't work, I'm still stressed out. And it was my own limitations that got in my way. Honestly, that's really what it was. And I had to overcome that real quickly. And I knew that I was going to hear some stuff that was not what I wanted to hear. Well, I still smoked a few cigarettes, you know, but I'm doing okay. And I heard some success stories and I heard some failures. And I had to get over that hurdle. And now, fortunately, I don't hear many failure stories. I, you know, mostly success stories because I've worked at it.
That's amazing. So for someone who's maybe in that same place where they're starting out and they have all those what ifs going through their head and all these shoulds, how would you instruct them to move from where they are to where they want to be?
That's a great question. And I kind of knew you were going to ask me this in the shower this morning. I was thinking, I wonder what she's going to ask me. And so I've got a couple of tips that I'd like to share. First of all is, you mentioned this word, a really important word. You said all these shoulds. I'm never a fan of shoulding on people. Yeah, I'll let that word sink in for a second. That's what I said. Don't should on people. People don't like to be should on. Little play on words there, but it's true. You should do this. You should do this. You should do this. But here's what I would suggest. Don't let people should on you. And don't should on yourself. I should do this. I should do this. Do what feels right for you. Tip number one, do what feels right for you. Remember, put yourself in the client's shoes for a minute. If you were the client and paying money to get help, how would you want to be treated? I wrote a book a number of years ago called The Platinum Rule of Customer Service, treating customers the way they want to be treated. Unlike the golden rule where you do unto others as you have them do unto you, treat them the way you want to be treated. I don't know how people want to be treated until I really find out how they want to be treated. And I don't want to treat them the way I want to be treated because they may not be wanting to be treated that way. So I wrote this book with, actually I co-authored it with 10 other business people. I was kind of the lead author on this book and that's the thing. Don't shit on people. Find out how they want to be treated. Ask them questions. Treat them with that platinum rule, not the golden rule, the platinum rule. And then you'll know what they're going to want and what they're going to like and what they're going to need. And then you can deliver on that. Second little tip I have is don't compare yourself to other people. Yep, your success or failure is not dependent on anybody else's success or failure. Because if you get into the, I wonder if I'm as good as game, then you're going to realize that there's always going to be somebody better than you. Yeah. Okay, get over it. And there's always going to be people that aren't as good as you. And with the way Facebook works nowadays, you can pretty much post anything you want and say, hey, I had an amazing day of clients today. And now you're looking at that post and you go, I only had two clients today. I didn't have a whole day of clients. God, I must suck. And then you realize their amazing day of clients was two clients. They had two long clients today. And you're like, oh, okay, I guess I'm not that bad. Don't compare yourself to other people. You know what? They're at their level. You're at your level. Be at your level. Be at that level. Be true to your own self. Be authentic. And you'll be fine. So it's just a couple little tips that I think will help people that are just getting started.
I love those. Can you tell us how we would go about finding out how a person wants to be treated so that we could treat them that way? Because I know so many of us operate from inside our own paradigm and we can't conceive of the idea that someone wants something different.
Yeah, it's really complicated. There's a whole big formula. I'm gonna try to spell it out. I'll make it as simple as possible here. It's really complicated. We should probably do graphs and charts and stuff, but it's a podcast, so we don't really have graphs or charts or pie charts. We should have a pie chart for this, maybe, or some, get out your scientific calculators and your slide rules. Here's the short version. Ask them. That's it. Ask them, what are your expectations? What do you want to get out of this? And now I do, in all sincerity, I do have a protocol that I do. I do have a system that helps me get to what their wants are. And it's called the Genie process. I've spoken about this.
What we I contacted you about.
Yeah, it was the genie process. I spoke, I speak at all kinds of hypnosis conferences. And I think at every conference I've ever spoken at, I've talked about the genie process. And it is my patented formula for really trying to figure out what, helping them figure out what they want. Not what I think they need or what I think I should do for them. But, oh, there is a fly like buzzing around my face now. Oh, distractions, bright and shiny objects. But it allows me to get to the core of why they're there. I mean, because we all know clients come to us and they go, yeah, I'm here to lose some weight. Okay, what does that mean? I know what it means for me, but I don't know what it means for you. And then before you know it, you realize that, you know, they weren't hugged enough as a child, or they like eating and watching TV or something. I don't know. We have to figure out what it is they're there for. And most importantly, though, we have to figure out what they want out of the sessions. Okay. We have all kinds of techniques. We have all kinds of scripts. We have all kinds of programs. We've all been certified in every different program out there. But if it doesn't blow their skirt up, if it doesn't blow their hair back, if it doesn't float their boat, whatever phrase you want to coin, if it doesn't mean anything to them and doesn't serve their wants, then it ain't gonna work 100%.
And I am so grateful that I heard you do that presentation early in my career, because it shifted things in a way for me that I literally just this morning in my Transy Tuesdays group, it's a group of hypnotherapists, mostly hypnotherapists who come in to receive hypnosis, just to bask in it. But today I did more of a teaching, you know, if you have these components in place, you will get the change. And I believe that number one component is getting them to paint a picture in their head of what they want, because we're fighting against what we don't want. So if I was listening to this podcast right now, I would be wanting to know where people can find about the genie process. I don't want to wait till the end. I want to tell people right now how they can get their hands on this.
Just contact me. And I do have, I have a website out there somewhere, I think. Mm-hmm. I have too many websites. I was just realized that as I was looking up my websites before we started this call. I have a website out there where you can actually sign up for the Genie Process training. And it's a pre-recorded training, and I do some live sessions in there as well too, so you can see it. Just contact me at virtualhypnosisonline.com. That's a virtual hypnosis. Online is spelled out. online.com, virtualhypnosisonline.com. And you can find me that way. And then that way we can talk about that training. Although I do teach it at a lot of conferences as well. But it's a process that the training program that I have pre-recorded is about 6 hours, I think. It's almost 6 hours, four to 6 hours of training with all the accompanying videos that go with me actually doing a session on some other people. And it's a pretty good process. I wrote it originally for my weight loss clients. And then I was in a session once with a smoker, and I started going through the process, and I went, oh, what am I doing? This is not a weight loss client. And then I realized, wait, I'm not going to say anything and see if they know. Of course, they didn't know, because they don't know what's supposed to happen anyways. So I did it, and it worked out really well. And they quit smoking like instantly in the session. I'm like, holy smokes, this stuff works. And so I use it with every single client, goes through it, no matter what they're seeing for. If they're a coaching client, if they're a hypnosis client, if they're another hypnotist that I'm working with, we go through the process, and it's key and it's critical to get us to the next step, what we need to work on.
I love that. What is, starting as a stage hypnotist and then moving into the clinical scene, what are some surprising things that you have noticed serve you well? What hypnosis practices do you bring into the clinical setting that might be surprising to some people, or maybe surprised you?
I don't think surprising so much, or surprised me so much. I mean, every day that I hypnotize somebody, whether it's in person or on stage, I am still amazed. And I don't say this with a whole lot of humor and comedy intended, but it's going to sound that way. I'm amazed that this stuff works. And I know it works. Okay. But when you're on stage and you get somebody to do something in a routine, and they do it really, really well, and they just rise to the top. And it's just so funny that I bust out laughing and the audience is laughing more because I'm laughing because I can't believe it. I stand up on stage every single night that I'm doing a show and I go, holy shit, this stuff works. And I'm like, I'm just as amazed. I'm like, I can't believe these people are doing this stuff. And I do the same thing in the office too, because I sometimes think we take for granted the skill that we have, because everybody has the skill, even our clients. Yeah. We just help facilitate it. We help draw it out in them. And so I think that's the main thing. And also, if I were to take anything from stage and use it in my office, it would be being more of an authoritarian type voice. On stage, we're much more commanding. You know, when the music starts, you will do this. For the person I just tapped on the shoulder, you will do this. You know, we're a little bit more permissive in our office voice. Whenever you're ready, go ahead and close your eyes. On stage, when I count to three, you're going to close your eyes. Ready? One, two, three, eyes closed, go. You know, it's not a choice, it's a command. In our office, we're much more permissive in our voice, but there are times where you need to be more authoritarian.
So you
Be mean. You gotta be mean. You're not mean. You're not.
Do you think that depends on the client, the situation?
Yep. Depends on the client, depends on the situation, depends on the hypnotist. And when I say you gotta be mean, of course, you know, I'm kidding. You don't have to be mean to your clients, but sometimes you just have to look at them and go, cut the crap, man. Why are you here? And they kind of go, what? You said crap. And I'm like, yeah, I did, because you're throwing me a line of bullshit right now and we need to stop. You need to stop, because what you're doing is you're feeding this bullshit to your own mind. And in hypnosis talk, we call that a limiting belief. And you're starting to believe that it's real, and you got to stop doing that. And that's on a conscious level. That's not even on a subconscious level. Your subconscious mind is accepting the words that you're saying as a belief system now, but your conscious mind is allowing your mouth to say that stupid shit. So stop saying it. If I can say stupid here, is that okay? If I can say stupid?
Okay, good.
You'll allow it this time. I hear all these bleeps when I listen to the pod. You're like, beep, 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 no, beep, 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 beep. Yeah,
I'll just tell them cover their kids' ears before they listen.
You know, I usually never say anything that you wouldn't hear on a middle school playground.
That's right, or the school bus. I remember when I was a little girl, I went to a private Christian school until second grade, and I came home from school at the end of the first day after having read all the words on the bathroom stall, and asked my mom what a four-letter word meant, and she didn't know what to do, and I remember sitting on the school bus and listening to the little boys behind me tell stories. And I think that was one of my biggest childhood traumas, listening to third grade boys talk.
Yeah. I usually ask permission before I swear. It's funny because I do a lot of school shows, and I've never once ever slipped up on stage and used profanity in a school show ever. I've done church shows. I've never slipped up. I was a youth director, youth pastor for 3 years, and I don't slip up. It's just, when I'm talking with adults, it's usually more acceptable. So I'm usually not too concerned about that. But I will tell you though, it's a funny, quick story. We're driving from Tucson to San Diego one year, and I had this minivan, and it was my wife and I and our oldest daughter, Sabrina. Our youngest daughter wasn't born yet. And so Sabrina was like, she was just learning how to talk, basically. And my parents were with us too, and we're all going to take this family trip to SeaWorld in San Diego. And just outside of Tucson, there's this big farm area. It's an ostrich farm. And so Sabrina, as we're driving by, she's pointing to the ostriches and she's going, "Oh shit, oh shit, oh shit." And my mom looks at me with lips pursed and she says, "See, I told you, you have to watch your mouth around her. She's picking up your language." And I'm like, "Shut the hell up, woman." No, I didn't say that, but I felt really bad. And then Billy, my wife, goes, "No, she's saying ostrich. She's trying to say ostrich." And I'm like, see, wasn't my fault after all.
I love that.
Yeah.
Michael, is there anything since learning clinical hypnosis that you've applied to your stage shows that have enhanced them?
Yeah, I guess so. I'm just trying to, you know, watch for people's expectations on stage two. Watch for their wants on stage two. We know we're not doing clinical stuff on stage, but you have to see what the expectation of each volunteer is on stage. You know, going back to, you know, the word want, what do you want? What do you want out of a session? What are your expectations? I believe the law of expectation is probably one of the most powerful laws out there. What you expect to happen is going to happen. Okay. And I love all these law of attraction people. I love them. I believe in the law of attraction too. And Victoria Gallagher, she's a great friend of mine. She does a great job at teaching the law of attraction. But I also, I teach that, but I also teach the law of expectation. What you expect to happen, you will manifest and it will happen. So it's taught me to look at every volunteer's expectation on stage two as quickly as I need to, because you don't have a whole lot of time to analyze the 12 to 15 people you have on stage. But it's taught me to be sensitive to that. What's their expectation? And how can I help enhance that expectation as their role as a volunteer in my stage show?
It seems almost like an unconscious asking, like you, what you were saying a moment ago. Are you kind of just like reading their body language and facial expressions to pick up on that expectation?
Yeah. And just their body language, how they walk on stage. Sometimes, especially in high school shows, you know, you have a chance to talk with people in the audience before the show. Kids will come up to you and they go, "Oh, will you please pick me to be in the show? I've lived my whole life. All I wanted to ever do was be in a hypnosis show. And you know, will you please pick me?" And you know, that's an expectation that if they want to be hypnotized, by golly, wild horses couldn't stop them from being hypnotized. So that's going to be a great subject already, just because they are so wanting to do it. They're so willing to do it. Their expectation is that I have some sort of magical powers and I'm going to get them up on stage and I'm going to like zap them into hypnosis. So I'm going to use that to my benefit, but I'm also going to make sure though that they realize I don't have magical powers and the expectation came from them. The magic came from them. And so use this force for good, not for evil, this power.
That's brilliant. You had mentioned at the beginning that the biggest obstacle that has been in your way in the past has been yourself. And before we started, I almost just said rolling tape again. Before we started rolling tape, before we started recording, you mentioned that you have had the past few weeks, you've overcome some really crazy limiting beliefs. And I asked if we could go there. So I would love to go there now.
Here we go. Yeah. You said roll tape. That's awesome. Yeah. This podcast will be available on cassette and 8-track after the show for $9.99 plus shipping and handling. So last week I had an episode. I had my own little meltdown. I've had several of them since the pandemic started. I'm sure everybody has. I hope everybody has. I don't want to be the only one. Well, I hope you didn't, but I hope you did, because I don't want to be the only one. But yeah, and yeah, if you did, call me at Virtual Hypnosis Online. I could probably help you out. So, you know, it's interesting because these tapes that we have, and I'll say tape now, these tapes that we have in our mind, they replay themselves often. And these limiting belief tapes, you know, we have a whole library of limiting belief tape number one, audio series, a 10 tape series. And we all have these limiting beliefs. And I got sucked into the trap myself last week. I had a show that was scheduled that I've done now for, well, I can't say this now, but I've done it for 10 years. This year would have been year 12. Last year would have been year 11, but we had this little thing called the pandemic. They had to cancel last year, and they were the first show that canceled on me last year in the pandemic. And then this year is rolling around. I'm starting to book some after prom shows, and I had this one booked. They said, "Yes, we want to do that. We are so excited. We're going to do an after prom this year." And then the superintendent of the school said, "We can't do it still, no after prom." So they had to cancel again. And think about this. First show that canceled on me last year. First show of about 50 that canceled on me last year. I think now I'm going to say this in jest, because I don't want to even give myself this, plant this seed. I have PTSD now with shows canceling. And I think that's what happened. They canceled again. And I went, oh my God, here we go again. I turned on my cassette player and I put in limiting belief tape number one. Let's start the whole audio series all over again. And it started replaying in my mind. And then I saw other hypnotists that I know say, hey, I just booked another after prom show. And I'm going, yeah, I just lost an after prom show. Yeah, this sucks. I think I'm just going to go lay down for a while. And I slept for a couple of days, not continuously, but my wife's like, what's wrong? And I'm like, maybe I should just not do this anymore, you know? And I went down this, I went from 0 to 60. I went from prosperous, being abundant and prosperous, to I'm living in a van down by the river, in 0 to 60. It just, the plane just, and blew up. It was horrible. And knowing what I know, I should be able to fix this, right?
Should.
No. Because I put on headphones and I was cranking that cassette tape, limiting beliefs, session number one, you know, and I was cranking it and I was listening to it and I was like, what am I doing? And I couldn't, it was spiraling out of control. And so it was really a dark couple of days for me. And then on top of that, I had clients that were experiencing the same thing and saying the same things to me. It's like, I don't know how I'm going to survive this. And I'm like, I know, me too. Why don't we just close our eyes and go into hypnosis together? Do you have anything that you can say to help me out? And here you are trying to help other people when you can't even help yourself. And I know please hear me. If you're a hypnotist out there, and this has happened to you, you need to pick up the phone, okay? Pick up the phone and call somebody. I don't care if it's me or Lori, or call another confidant that you have and share with them that you're afraid, that you're scared, that you're pissed off, that you're angry, that you're so upset at the world right now that you can't control yourself, and do that. And, you know, chances are the other person on the other end of the phone is going to go, yeah, I'm feeling the same way right now. This is pissing me off. Sure enough, I had a friend call me last night, another hypnotist. She said, you know what? I'm thinking of quitting. And I'm like, no, you're not. Stop. No. I was allowed to do that last week. You're not allowed to do that now. Okay. Cut that crap right now. Press pause on your tape recorder and stop listening to that bullshit. And she goes, wait a minute. She goes, I'm seeing all your great posts and how busy you are. And I'm like, yeah, I'm busy, but I also have my struggles too. I've got my demons too. We all do. We're not perfect. Look in the mirror. You're not perfect. Get over it. I'm damn close, but not totally. So, you know, we all have that at some point or another. And so help each other out, for crying out loud.
I think there's a lot of people that need to hear that, myself included. And I know I have historically thought of myself as just very solitary and not super great at networking and building relationships and cultivating friendships. And that's been one of the things, you know, me reaching out to you was one little glimpse into that for me, where when I finally acknowledged I can't do this by myself, and the beauty that comes from those connections and comes from that vulnerability is really incredible. I have noticed that. For me, the hardest part of being an entrepreneur, of having my own hypnosis business, as many hypnotists who are listening do, has been overcoming that hypnosis, or that limiting beliefs 101 soundtrack. For me, it's you should turn off all of your social media. You should shut down your podcast. You should go hide and be a hairstylist again, because you are ridiculous.
No, you know what? Because you were a hypnotist when you were a hairstylist too.
Yes.
You just didn't have the certificate on the wall at that point in time. You know, we serve other people. That's our job as human beings. Whether you sell tires at a tire shop, you're a grocery store clerk, you're a hairstylist, you're a doctor, it doesn't matter what you do. We serve people. And we all do it pretty well, to our own degrees and to our own level of understanding what that means to serve people. And You know, I agree with you though. Yeah, it kind of, you should almost turn off social media because it's a wicked thing. But at the same time, it's also lets you know that you're not alone out there. There's other people that feel the same way too. Yeah. And you know, you really just have to believe in what you're doing. You have to want to do what you want to do more than anybody else in the world.
Yes.
And as entrepreneurs and as, you know, solopreneurs, we're all solopreneurs, really. Most of us don't have a staff. We don't have, I mean, I don't even have an office. I work online. You know, I don't have a, I am the secretary. I look good in a short skirt, by the way. I'm just saying, I got the legs for it. I'm the chief cook bottle washer. Fortunately, I've automated my business. So I don't really have to worry about setting appointments with a calendar and a pen. But before I had to do that too. I was the payroll clerk. I was the accounts receivable. I was the accounts payable. I was everything. I still am. And yes, we can outsource things. Jason Ledet always talks about outsourcing, and we can do some of that stuff. Some of it, though, it's left to us to do.
Yeah.
So, but underneath all that, remember, why are you doing this? Because you have this desire. Somewhere inside of you is this flame and this fire that's been kindled to help people. And that's the most important thing we can do in this life. That's greater than any gift we can give to the world, is helping others. Mother Teresa said her goal was to, I want to save just one. And I think she hit that goal a couple million times over. She's still hitting that goal. You know, her legacy still changes people's lives. But she just knew she just needed to save just one person. And I say this to all hypnotists that I train, and I'll say it here. What we do doesn't just change people's lives. We save people's lives. And think about that. You get somebody to quit smoking, you're not just changing their life. You perhaps could be saving their life.
Yes.
That's a smoker. That makes sense. Okay. You get somebody to help them manage their weight. You could be not just changing their life. You could be saving their life from a horrible, horrible weight-related disease. You get somebody who's just having a shitty day that just wants a session for a quick tune-up. You're not just changing their day. You could be saving their life.
Yes.
And it's pretty darn powerful. I can count on one hand that I know of three people who have told me that I've saved their life. And it's the most humbling experience ever. But it's still why I keep fighting this fight and doing what I'm doing. You know?
You are inspiring the heck out of me. Will you talk to us about how you were able to stop that cassette and step out of those limiting beliefs, or perhaps are still in process of? Will you give some people who are feeling that same way, maybe they just want to close the doors, what would you tell them?
I would tell them, you know, reach out and talk to somebody. Don't be on an island. Get in your boat, get off the island, come back to the mainland for a while and play with the rest of us idiots and talk to us and realize you're not alone. Whatever despair you're going through right now, trust you, I've probably been there before myself several times. You know, I know people that struggle. The busiest and the brightest and the best hypnotists out there have all struggled at one time or another. You know, and it's just how you deal with it. And reach out and talk to somebody. Get off the island for a minute. And then look in the mirror and ask yourself the question, why am I doing this? And don't settle for the, I don't know why I'm doing this anymore bullshit answer, because yes, you do, because you wouldn't have never started this journey if you didn't know why you wanted to do this. Go back to the very beginning, rekindle that flame. Okay. Talk to yourself, but talk to somebody else though, too. There's no shame in reaching out. I can't tell you how many times that, and I know he won't mind me saying this, that Dan Kandel, my training partner, as people fondly refer to it, we fondly refer to each other. I'm his work wife, and I'm married, by the way. I do have a real wife too. So, but I'm his work wife, and he says I'm his work mom, and because I'm a little bit older than him. But I can't tell you how many times we've both been on the phone during this last 12 months of pandemia, and we've cried, we've talked, I've yelled, I've screamed. He's yelled, he's screamed, not at each other. Just, we're just pissed off at the world. And this is frustrating. And we've cried. We've had some times we've shared, we've had our struggles too. But why are we here? Why are we doing this?
That's so awesome. And I think his name comes up maybe more than anyone else. It says so much about him that he is cultivating these relationships and cultivating these friendships, because I think Anthony Cirino mentioned him, and he's a compassionate guy. For anyone listening, you should find my podcast with him, because it's amazing as well.
You know, this isn't about Dan anymore, Lori. This is about me now. Okay. Can we stop talking about Dan? Okay. I mean, he's a nice guy and all, but I thought this was a Mike Deschau. Why does it always turn on to him? Why am I not as good as him? I'm just not as good as him. Wow. There's so, you know, and again, you know what, a true person who doesn't, a person who's true to themselves and doesn't want to have any more limiting beliefs, they want to build somebody else up too. And that's why I brought up Dan, you know, and you're right. Everything you just said is so true. Dan's an amazing guy. I'm glad to be associated with him. I'm smarter and I'm better because I associate with him. I'm smarter and better. My life is more complete because I associate with people like you. I am not just Michael DeShalit, certified hypnotist, virtual hypnosis online. This is all your businesses. And I'm in part of your business. You're part of my business because we've learned from each other. So we're in this together. We're all on the same team and we're all fighting the same fight.
Yeah. Can we unpack that? Because the first time I went to HypnoThoughts, I just remember being in awe, because it was almost as if the love on that, like on the second floor of the New Orleans hotel, it was almost palpable. Like you could feel it, and you could feel this spirit of everyone lifting each other up. And I feel like it's a group of people who have more hope for the human race than anyone else, because we do see that magic, and that every day we say, I can't believe that worked. And I've noticed that there, for the most part, there's such a beautiful sense of community and collaboration. So will you talk to the person, earlier you said one of the most important things is not to compare yourself to others and to lift others up. Can you talk to anyone who might have a limiting belief about, you know, there being a sense of competition between different hypnosis practitioners?
Yeah, competition. Wow, what a huge, horrible word. I use the word. You know, I talk about, you know, like, okay, let's ask the question. Let's really uncover the elephant in the room here, Lori. So why am I helping you with this podcast? Huh? You're my competition. Why should I come on your podcast and help your listenership understand more about hypnosis? I should be doing my own dang podcast, and I should be having you on as a guest. Well, I bet if I did have a podcast, you'd come on too.
Yes, I would.
And I'm using air quotes, people, for you listening at home. Why am I helping you out? You're my competition. Okay. Well, in the sense of the word, yes, you are my competition. We could be vying for the same clients online. I doubt it. But if I think about it that way, then yes, you are my competition. And that's a pretty dark and ugly word. But I don't look at it that way. And I think that I don't really know a lot of hypnotists that look at it as competition, because we all do something a little bit different. And we all, even, I mean, you work with smokers, I work with smokers. Okay, so wow, we are a competition now. But you know how many smokers there are in the world? I don't think we're going to cross paths. And especially with stage hypnotists, I get asked this question too. Mike, you train people to be stage hypnotists, but you're a stage hypnotist. Aren't you creating your own competition? And my answer is, yes, I am. But here's the thing. If I'm going to lose a show to somebody, I want to lose it to somebody who I know is going to do a great job, who's going to do just as good a job as I could do, maybe even better, because I want that client who hired that person to do that show to say, wow, hypnosis was represented well here today. What a great time we had hiring a hypnotist. Next year, when we do that show, we want to bring Mike DeShalit back again to do that show again. And if Mike's not available, we're going to ask him who he would recommend, because he probably is fellowshipping with other people as good as him. So look at it this way. It's not competition. It's fellowshipping with other people that are just as good, if not even better than you, that you can learn from. We don't have competition. We have camaraderie.
Yes.
And you know, isn't that it? You want the one word to unpack it? It's camaraderie. It's compassion for each other. And I don't know anybody at HypnoThoughts or even some other conferences that if you go up to them and say, hey, how do I do this? How do you do what you do? How do I do this? And now, I mean, sometimes they're going to sell you their class because, hey, that's what we do to make a living. But sometimes they're just going to tell you, hey, here's how you do it. Just do this. Just be you. Be authentic. I don't, you know, more important than any scripts or any programs or any system, the client's going to listen to you and your heart. And if you're passionate about what you do, if you care about the client, they look to you as being the expert. So whatever you say is the gospel truth, and it's going to help them to make that change and change their life or save their life.
I hope everyone listening rewinds the cassette tape and re-listens to what Michael just said.
Yeah, listen to that tape over again. Don't listen to the limiting belief stuff. That's just garbage. Yeah, throw that cassette tape library out.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have so many different ideas of where we could go. Is there any direction you'd like to go next, Michael?
You know, I don't really think so. I mean, I'm willing to talk about anything. You know, I think we're on the right path, though. It's just really don't compare yourself to others. That's the huge limiting belief. That just brings on a limiting belief. Don't you know, shoot on yourself, and don't let other people shoot on you. Now, again, we all use these words. We use the word competition, and I mean it not in a horrible sense of the word when I use it, but we use the word should. I don't mean that in a horrible sense either, but don't let people tell you how to run your practice. No, you're going to run your practice the way you want to run your practice. Now, if something's broken, if it's not working well, seek advice, get help, okay? And if somebody says, well, maybe you should try this instead of that, then listen to them. I guess that's another little tip is listen to everybody else. Listen to what they say, learn from them. If you think that it's good advice, take it and figure out how you can spin it your own way and make it you. And if it's not good advice and you can't use it right now, just stick it on a shelf someplace. You might use it later. I learned something great from being in the magic world. And I'll share this little quick story with you. There was a magic shop in Tucson, Arizona, where I used to live for 52 years. And it was one of the best magic shops on the planet. And they had a little back room. It was Williams Magic. And they had a little back room that had a little, just like a dining room table, and had a TV in there with a VCR player. That's how old it was. And we used to watch like show tapes of other magicians. And then when we do a big community show with a bunch of magicians, we'd all go there on Sunday, the day after the show, and watch the tape of the show. And we, you know, we'd laugh at each other and, oh, you did great there. Well, that would suck. You know, it was good. And we'd have fun. And there was a guy that hung out at the magic store. His name was Felipe. Now Felipe, he had a mental or an emotional disability. He was definitely not all there. And he would say the damnedest things, but he would just hung out at the magic shop because it was a friendly place to be. He did some magic. It wasn't very good because of his disability. But he also claimed to be other things. Like he said, he was a mime. And I said, well, Felipe, you can't be a mime because mimes don't talk. And he goes, I'm a talking mime. I'm like, good then. Okay, that's perfect then. That works. Okay, that's fine. We'll go with that. Felipe had a bunch of magical apparatus. He had a lot of money. He received disability and he had a lot of money. He bought a lot of magic stuff. His house was like a magic warehouse. And he knew a lot about magic, but nobody took him serious because he had this mental disability. And he would say the dumbest thing sometimes. But I listened to Felipe every time he said something. When he watched my performance on the videos, he would say, oh, I like how you do that. That's good. Maybe you should do this or should do this. Maybe you should think about this. And most of the time, it was just a bunch of nonsense. Okay. But there is one act that I put together in magic, and I was trying to keep the congruency together. I was trying to tell a story with this. And there was this one part of it that there was just some incongruency to it. And I'm watching it and I'm talking to the other guys in the shop, and Felipe's sitting there, and I'm talking to the other magicians that I know, some that have more years experience than I'll ever have. And they go, "We'll try this or try this." And it just wasn't resonating. And Felipe spoke up and he says, "Why don't you just do this?" And I went, "Ah," it was the aha moment. He said something that made 100% sense. Everything else that he had said, the time that I had known him, was total rubbish. Not intentionally from him. But this one thing he said was perfect. Yeah. And it solved this problem. So even if somebody, even if you don't like another hypnotist because they say a bunch of things that maybe you don't agree with, okay, no big deal. It's rubbish to you. That's fine. Doesn't mean they're rubbish. It just means it's rubbish to you. You wouldn't do it that way. Good. Don't do it that way. Be you. Okay. But if they say that one thing that makes a difference, listen to it, use it. All the other stuff, put on a shelf. You may never know when you need it, but that thing, use it.
You touched on something else that I think is so valuable, and that is this idea of seeking feedback. It can be so scary when we get started. We're so afraid of making a fool of ourselves. It's almost like we want to hide. But when you come out into the light and let people see what you're doing and ask for ways to get better, that can be incredibly valuable, don't you think?
Absolutely. And here goes back to that book that I told you about, the Platinum Rule of Customer Service, treating customers the way they want to be treated. Tell your friends, tell your colleagues, say, "Look, I need some feedback. Here's how I would like to receive it." Set the boundaries with them. Don't mince words. My magician friends, and actually this was the catalyst for the book for me, was my magician friends, because I have magician friends, I have hypnotist, stage hypnotist friends, clinical hypnotist friends, and then just a few friends that are normal people that are not, that don't have psychological disorders like the magicians, the hypnotists, and the stage hypnotists. Let's just face it, we're all weirdos. So my magician friends, we had an agreement. It was an unwritten agreement. It was just an unspoken, unwritten agreement that we would do each other a favor if we were performing something and they saw something that didn't look good that you were doing. They would tell you, "That's total shit. Don't do that. Change it. Fix it." Okay. And then if they saw something that they really liked, they would, "That was really good." Even going back further in my life, I was a musician before I was a magician, and I grew up in high school band, marching band. I grew up in band since fourth grade, elementary school, middle school band, marching band in high school, drum corps. I marched professional drum corps for 5 years. And we had a drum corps instructor. His name was Tom Leslie. And he was a high school band director, but then he taught drum corps stuff to us on the weekend. And he said this to us. He said, "I will never tell you you're good when you're not. And I'll never tell you you suck when you don't. I'm going to tell you you suck when you suck. I'm going to tell you you're good when you're good. You'll know, always know where you stand with me." And your friends and your comrades in arms should be that honest with you. And you should be willing to receive that honesty because it's said with love. I know that if my magic friend said, "Wow, that sucked. That part of your act sucked ass." I know they weren't saying, "Mike DeShalit, you're a horrible human being. You're pathetic and you should never do magic again." They would never say that because they don't mean that. They said that routine sucked. That part of it sucked. I got over it. I fixed it. I asked for help from them. So how should I fix it? And they go, "You should do this." And I'm like, "Okay, thanks." And then occasionally I listen to people like Felipe and he figured it out for me. But that's just how I wanted to be treated. I was okay with that. I'm okay with my close circle of magician friends and stage hypnotist friends going, "Dude, that really sucked," or "That was really great." If I had an unsolicited person come up and tell me that, it might hurt a little bit because we don't have that same boundary. So find people that you know, like, and trust. Find people that are your cohorts in the business and outside of the business. Because as hypnotists, we don't see things from an outsider's perspective always. So you have to get internal and external feedback.
Yeah. Do you have any tips for knowing who is the right person to accept feedback and who, because sometimes people will throw stuff out there that is just hurtful and mean, and they aren't coming from a good place. So mm-hmm. is there some kind of maybe a litmus test where a person can decide, is this valuable feedback? And if so, how to protect themselves from those hurtful words from not well-meaning people?
You know, that's a tough question. And it's kind of tough to build that relationship with somebody when you're first starting out with it. You know what I mean? It's like you have to build rapport with a client. Well, you have to build rapport with another hypnotist, with a cohort, with a colleague that's going to be that person that you can trust to give you good feedback. And it's not something that you could just go up to somebody at a conference and go, "Hey, could you give me some feedback? I think you're awesome." They'd be like, "Who the hell are you?" Or, I don't know anything about you. And so maybe they can't make a educated decision or give you educated feedback because they don't really know. So it has to be somebody that you're in rapport with. It has to be somebody that you've known for a while. It has to be somebody that you can trust. So I would watch their behaviors and see if they're like-minded like you. Now you have to be careful with that though. Because you don't just want somebody who's going to sugarcoat everything and go, "Oh, Lori, that you did great. That was a great job." And it could have totally sucked. And they would still tell you it's a great job because they don't want to hurt your feelings.
Right.
That's where the boundaries come in. You have to be very clear on that. My friends, well, my prior lifetime is just a professional magician and mostly a performer. Performers don't wake up early. We like to sleep in till the crack of noon. And, I'm not a morning person to begin with. And I have a friend who's also a magician, a full-time professional magician. We don't call him before noon because it's senseless. He's not awake and he won't even answer the phone anyways. And so you just don't call him before noon. That's his boundary. And he goes, "Yeah, just don't call me before noon." I, on the other hand, well, and he just turned his phone off before noon. I keep my phone on. It's right by me. And if you call me before noon, I'm going to be polite. I'm going to answer the phone, but I'm probably going to tell you later on, if you call me before, you know, such and such time — it's not noon anymore, by the way, you can call me early — but if you call me before such and such time, I will kill you. I will kill you. I will hunt you down. I will kill you. I will hunt you like a wounded animal, and I will kill you. Don't call me before such and such a time. I like my sleep. And I would say it with love. I would kill you with love, but I would kill you. You just have to set those boundaries. If that makes sense, you have to do the same thing with feedback. I want your feedback, and I'm okay if you tell me it sucked, or if you can use another word than sucked. If you saw something I'm doing that you think is bad, tell me it's bad, but be nice about it. I have pretty thick skin. I want to know. I want to know if it sucked. I'm okay with you speaking to me that way, but others may not be. So set your boundaries, be in rapport with them, look for like-minded people. But not just like-minded people that will say nice things because they think that's what you want to hear. It's not always the right answer.
Yeah.
That was a long answer for a really short question.
I
rambled a little bit on that one.
It's good. Michael, this has been so awesome. Is there anything in closing that you would like to impart to a person who has been having those limiting beliefs? Perhaps a pandemic has been really hard for them and it's feeling a little bit like there's some PTSD going on. Mm-hmm. What would you say to that person to just pull them up, lift them up?
You're not alone. We all have our own struggles. We all have our demons, some worse than others. I look at people that I idolize and I go, "Man, I wish I was so much like that. I wish I was calm like that all the time. I wish I could have that sense of peace that they have all the time." And then when you get to know them, you realize that sometimes they get angry too. And we have emotions, okay? There's a bunch of them. We were given these emotions to use them appropriately, of course. And so we should be upset when we need to be upset. We should be sad. We should be mad. We should be happy. We should be grateful. We should be — I don't know what all the emotions are. There's a bunch of them. We should try them all out though. Okay. At the appropriate time. And doing it at the appropriate place, as long as you're not hurting anybody else, or hurting yourself, then it's okay to use those emotions. my wife knows when I get mad. I'm not mad at her. I'm not mad at the kids. I'm just mad. I'm just mad because I need to be mad right now. And as long as I don't hurt anybody else or myself in the process, there's nothing wrong with using that emotion. And a lot of times that anger will inspire me to make a change that I need to make. So use your emotions as a tool. If you need to be sad, be sad. Nothing wrong with that. So use your emotions, but also know that we're all here for you. Ask for help. There's no shame in asking for help. The smartest people have coaches. Smartest people ask for help because they realize they don't know everything.
Yeah.
And I don't know everything. As a matter of fact, on most days, I know little to nothing. I've just surrounded myself with really good people who know a lot. So I come off looking really smart and good looking. I had to mention that because Lori has not mentioned that once in the podcast yet. So I thought
it was a complete oversight. I should have put that
you should have put that right in the intro then, huh? And he's good looking too. You have to ask for help. It's okay. We're here for you. Call me anytime. And I mean, anytime. Yeah, I'm a little slow at 3 a.m. and I'm a little slow at like 7:30 a.m. I usually get up around 8. I'm just lazy. But call me. I'll answer the phone. I'll talk to anybody anytime. If you need me to talk you down, I'll talk you down. If you need me to reach to the phone and slap you upside the head, I will slap you upside the head. If you need some hugging, if you need some loving, I'll give it to you. If you need a good ass whooping, I'll give you that too. That's what we should do for everybody.
I agree.
Appropriately, at the right time.
Yeah. Michael, what is the best way for people to follow up with you and get in touch with you and your resources?
Best way, a couple different ways. virtualhypnosisonline.com. Again, that's all spelled out, virtualhypnosisonline.com. My 800 number is right there on the top of the page. You can find me on Facebook, Michael C. DeShallet. Just look for the good looking guy with the spiky hair. That's me. Reach out to me on Facebook. My toll-free number, like I said, is on the website. It's on my Facebook page. Call me anytime. The toll-free number, it's a big ruse, people. I don't really have like a special line, you know, like just like a phone that's like the toll-free line. It just rings to my cell phone. Get over it. So just call me. It'll get you right to me. That way you don't have to memorize my real phone number.
I love that. That is incredible. Okay. So yes, call Michael at 3 a.m. at that 800 number. He'll have...
There's a good chance I'm usually up at 3 a.m. So I'm a night owl, so...
And see, I'm the opposite. I'm up at 5 a.m. and I'm a zombie by 8 p.m. So.
Ooh, 5 a.m. The only time I'm up at 5 a.m. is when I stay up to 5 a.m. my life has changed because, you know, I'm an adult now and I have to be like responsible apparently. So I do wake up at a normal time and I do go to bed. Well, I go to bed usually about between midnight and 1 o'clock. I get up around 7:30, 8 o'clock, something like that.
That's respectable.
Yeah, it's respectable.
I can approve of that.
Because Vegas has great steak and eggs at like midnight. So you got to stay up at least till midnight to get good steak and eggs, you know, for $5.
Yeah.
So it's all the important things in life.
This has been so awesome. I'm so grateful for you doing this. I've been looking forward to it and it exceeded all expectations. So thank you so much, Michael. Thank you to everyone who listened and have an amazing day.
Awesome. Thank you, Lori, for doing this. You're amazing yourself. And I can't wait to see you at the next conference again.
I'm so grateful you've listened all the way to the end. What is one tiny action step you'll take now based on an aha moment you got during the podcast? Maybe that life-changing action step is to come accept the gift I have for you at theimpostermonster.com. Head there right now to get your powerful hypnosis audio, The Answer Room, that lets you make important decisions and get crystal clear about your next step forward on this path of purpose in your one great and precious life.